from the infamous Kelsey Recordings in Northern California, comes the greatest music podcast ever conceived. It's time for In the Meantime. Here are your hosts, French Girls.
That production, dude.
Is that
can
your
you
guys' song?
Yeah.
That's tight. I like it.
Yeah.
Thanks, man.
Dude, welcome to In the Meantime, the French Girls podcast. Today is just fucking great and amazing. I'm excited. We've been talking for like 30 minutes already. We're here today with the Iron Heart.
Hello. You guys want to introduce yourselves and your respected positions in the band?
Yeah. I'm Justin, and I'm the bass player.
I'm Joel, and I'm the drummer.
Tom, guitar and vocals.
Awesome.
I'm laughing because of the production value. I'm already blown away. It's phenomenal.
Dude, it's going to be revolutionary. It's going to be the highest definition of fart jokes you could possibly get.
Crisp.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Dude, this is great. I think you guys are the first band that we've ever had this.
Awesome.
I'd like to say you were the first guest, but we had Charlie's cousin.
Yeah, we had my cousin before. Yeah.
So. This is our first podcast.
All right.
And you guys listen to podcasts, right?
Yeah, well, Tom and I do.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
We're podcast guys.
Addicted. Cool.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah. I had a weird moment the other day where I was like, I think I listen to more like podcasts and comedy podcasts than I do music. Like, is that good? But they're addictive. They're so addictive. Yeah. And they have a way of passing time kind of differently than music. Like, I get so into music that it's almost like time slows down in a way. Like, you listen to music at work, and it's like, it can slow you down. But podcast, day wraps up quick.
It's like listening or being involved in a conversation.
Yeah.
But you're not really there, but, you know, it's cool.
Yeah, it's kind of passive. You don't have to, it's like being in a conversation, but kind of laying back.
It's better than radio, because radio, you have commercials and all these constraints, and you have to fit in the 10-minute whatever. But podcast, you can kind of free flow and go on, and like, it's really more conversational.
Oh, I feel like the second everybody has that auxiliary cord in their car, like, radio is just going to be done.
Right. Yeah. We're close. Yeah. You know,
I still got my 91, so
right,
I got a couple more years. I
got
still burn
my
CDs.
71.
Nice.
Yeah.
Right. Well, we played with you guys at the Phoenix back in January. That's how we met you guys. That was a sweet show.
That was amazing.
Really stacked show.
Time. Yeah, that was a great lineup. Great night.
Yeah, you guys played there before that, you said?
Yeah, we played twice before that. That was our most recent show. But the first time, it's a bit of a mishmash, but then we started trying to find our own friends, bands, and other bands we liked and stuff. And the last one with you guys was the best so far. You know,
that was good.
We can
cool.
Keep it up.
Yeah. Did you say you used to go there as a kid, too? Is that, like, common?
Oh, yeah. That place is pretty legendary.
Yeah. We're from Napa, which is, you know, right up the road from Petaluma. And in Napa, like, there's not... At the time, now there is, but when I was a kid, there was no place for bands of some stature to play, you know? So, like, the Phoenix, like, I've seen Deftones out there.
Oh, cool.
Slipknot, like, all these big bands out there when I was a kid, you know?
Yeah.
Recently, you know, even recently, I saw AFI there, like, 5 years ago or something.
Yeah. Whoa.
Primus, of course.
Yeah.
Hilary Duff.
Method Man and Red Man.
Did Primus open for Hilary Duff or the other way around?
I forget.
No, Hanson has played there, too. Like, they get some weird pop acts in there, too.
I mean, they like, still can draw really well. I saw Against Me there recently, and the place was packed. It was a sweet show. It was going nuts.
I saw the photo. I think Jenny Lewis did a show there, and I think I saw a line out the door. I go, that's nice to see that they can still do that, because compared to shows maybe where it's, you know, not quite packed out, which...
Yeah. Well, they've had financial troubles through the years. Like, they were on the ropes, I think, for a while. I think the AFI show I went to might have been some kind of a big benefit show.
Oh, wow.
But it's nice, like, to see that they still get a lot of big rappers in there, too.
Yeah.
Like, they get... It's still there, and it's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've played there like 6-7 times now. We really
you guys said that.
They just let us. Yeah. It's weird because we didn't have the childhood experience of like going to the Phoenix all the time. So like now my girlfriend's lived here her whole life, and going to the Phoenix is like the cliche, like Rohnert Park thing. Like everyone goes to the Phoenix.
Place to take your band shots.
Yeah, yeah. Right. And we're just like obsessed with it. Yeah.
Did you guys book your own shows there? Or?
Yeah. Tom has been fucking great.
He does a podcast too. He does a podcast on stage.
Really?
Spreading around the podcast.
Crazy stories on that thing.
Yeah, too. Yeah,
he has
really cool.
Like good AFI stories where people are getting beat up in the streets and sounds like a good time.
I haven't listened to it, but I keep track on on Facebook. I see it, and he's had some cool guests. Like I should check that out.
So you guys are from Napa, right?
All three of us.
Born and raised.
Nice. Wow. How would you compare the music scene back when you were first starting to get into music around here as to how it is now?
You know, so actually 10 years ago, we were in a different band called Once Over. At that time, even the Bay Area scene was something completely different. I think it was more vibrant. And the Napa scene, even at that time, 10 years ago, I don't think...
It didn't really exist.
There was literally nothing.
Yeah.
Was there even... I mean, Joel might remember better. I mean, was there a place...
There were bands, but they weren't... Like there wasn't anywhere to play. Like there was the Legion Hall, which had like kind
of
shitty punk rock or hardcore bands or whatever.
Wow.
Yeah, like every time something would start to get like we did a show at the Elks Lodge and it was really good, and we did another one and it was really good. And then they decided to up the security deposit like super crazy, so we couldn't do shows.
They essentially
anymore.
Kicked us out. I mean, it was we had. I mean, that's right. We had to make our own shows. The town was so hungry for it. It filled out. I mean, that's a massive hall.
Right.
And I think after that, they said, like, you guys basically can't come back unless you give us all this money.
Yeah,
they gentrified you.
I don't know if it was like just the old school or whatever, like the old people who live there. And like, you know, now it's a little different. It's like sort of like Disneyland for winos, tourists or whatever. You know, it's become more of an attraction or a place to come. And there's a big theater and there's all kinds of, there's even now smaller, like little kind of punk rock sort of places, like art galleries that do shows.
Silas.
And stuff.
Wow. So like the wine industry almost helps the music industry in a way.
I think it
gave
has.
It a boost.
Yeah, I mean, like Bottle Rock is there now.
Right,
and like I say, there's a huge theater that brings in national acts, and there's now sort of smaller places that bring in bigger acts. And it's also provided a place for art type of bands to play
as well. Yeah, when you have that kind of tourism, which Napa is really, it's coming around. I mean, when we were growing up, Napa was still a country town.
Yeah.
But there's so much more money coming into Napa that you needed entertainment as well as alcohol. So, you know, there's two decent venues, good venues, Uptown Theaters, you know, about 800 capacity, and City Winery is about 400. And they're very nice. They're very kind of clean, you know, kind of a gourmet experience a little bit, but still they get some cool stuff. I mean, Snoop Dogg came to Uptown.
Yeah, B.B. King has played Uptown.
Wow.
Uptown gets comedians too. Right. You know, it's a real legit theater.
So the Horses came through Uptown.
Very
that
cool.
Was one of the best shows I've ever seen to date.
Wow.
The band Horses, that was a phenomenal show.
I caught them live at Outside Lands a few years ago. They were totally so tight. Yeah. Really good.
You know, the funny thing about those guys too is they all live in different states. I heard them on a podcast.
Was it the Nerdist?
Yes, I heard that. But it was really interesting. They were talking. So, like, is that meta if we're talking about other podcast bands' experiences on different podcasts? But they all live in different states, and they're like, "Yeah, if there's a new song, we'll just work it out at soundcheck." Like when we're playing for like 5,000 people, I thought that was such a trip. You know, so we're trying to practice five times a week. You know, we still might fuck up.
So then you guys are playing Bottle Rock, right?
Yeah.
Cool. Were you guys practicing a bunch, getting ready for that? Second time?
Yeah.
Oh, cool, cool.
Our first show was actually the first Bottle Rock.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah.
How was it?
It was a trip.
Yeah.
I mean, like you said, it was our first show. Like, we not our first show ever, but our first show was the Ironheart. You know? So we had never, we hadn't been in the scene for a while. And like
5 years, yeah, 5 years
for,
or something.
For that to be the first thing back, you know, it's like a whole backstage and the catering.
Not only that, we wrote our set in a, literally a week and a half, 2 weeks.
Yeah. Wow.
We got booked so last minute, and it's like, hey, you know, I think it was because that the guy from Grateful Dead like hurt himself, and they had to cancel. So there was all this time opened up on one of the days, so that it opened up the world for us. Like, hey, you guys want
to
play?
And because we're from Napa, we know people, so we were able to get that connection.
Right.
And I went to a psychiatrist, and I said, you need to dope me up, because I'm so nervous. And he gave me a cocktail of these pills. He's like, yeah, this is, like, what you need. And I remember I kind of, like, it was anxiety pills, but I remember, like, kind of blacking out, and we got through it. I remember saying, oh, you know, I think for our first show, that was good. If that was our 10th show, it would have been bad. But, I mean, we got through it, and we kind of did it.
And that, and Tom had never been a singer prior to this, too, you know?
Holy shit,
yeah, this
really?
Is the first time I've... Yeah. I mean, I've always, like, kind of sang on my couch at my house by myself, but, I really just started singing for this.
Wow, that's insane.
At Bottle Rock, you had only been singing, like, in a band for, like a couple weeks.
If that catches me off guard, because if I would have guessed, I would have guessed you'd been singing lead for a long time.
Well, that's a common mistake.
I would have guessed you've been like just playing the blues since a wee little boy.
Funny, actually. I have been playing the blues since I was about 14 years old. That's really how I learned, but it was only guitar,
right?
And it was never singing; it was just guitar. But
wow.
Well, I definitely hear a lot of blues in you guys' music.
Yeah,
I like it. I hear like kind of like a blaster's angle of the blues, and like maybe like a T-Rex type like stomp on the beats, you know? It's like it's bluesy, but there's such a stomp behind it that
I like the stomp.
I like that.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, I really dug you guys' show.
Thanks.
Well, we're playing together again. We're playing together again.
Yeah, together again.
That was the first of many.
Yeah. We gotta find just enough bands that kind of fit in together and take over. That's the plan, right? Yeah. Try to take over the world.
Have you guys played with Holy West?
No. Who are they?
They're pretty good.
They're playing with us at
That show
at the Red House.
Cool.
They're a band that we met early on in the Ironheart's career, and they're sort of like-minded. You know, they're a little bit older dudes like us, and they play kind of rock, blues rock, Americana rock. You know, and they've gotten really solid. Yeah, their singer is really great. They're a really tight band, and you know, we haven't played with them in a while, so they got booked totally separate of us. Like, you were the one band I suggested because they needed an opener. They had already booked Bully West, so I was very happy with that. You know, they're you guys should check them out. Like, it's a good fit. That lineup is a solid lineup.
Yeah,
I'm stoked. That's gonna be a sweet show. Mm-hmm. I don't have a real frame of reference for Walnut Creek. I think I've been there like once, but
founded in 1842, Walnut Creek is a... Yeah.
Facing New York.
It was kind of a big family. I think we would consider ourselves a part of that family, but it was, and that was the world. And then kids were just, but at the same time though, we were a little bit closer in age to the people that were going to the shows.
Right.
They were teen centers rather than bars.
Right. That's what I mean. Like, maybe we've grown up and we just have a different scene now, or it's a different thing for us.
We're going to start playing teen centers again.
That's what it boils down to. We're going to
do Quonset Huts and all that good stuff.
Yeah, I guess I didn't know quite such a deep history about it, but we've had some struggles just getting people to come out to shows, and I think the angle we've started to take is trying to think more along the lines of like getting like art and food and maybe a bunch of things together into a show, because it does seem like people have don't have the same desire to just go out to a rock show.
You need like more stimulation,
like something that like a serious event, more stimulation.
Yeah, totally true. I mean, people are overstimulated, so you know you need to.
We just did something kind of like that in Napa. We were trying to do not just a typical rock show. We booked a rapper and we had this guy who was a host. DJ. And like we called it Home for the Holidays with the Ironheart. It was not total variety show, but it was a variety of things on the show. It wasn't just I'm going to see rock band A, B, and C. You know, it was different. It was, and it worked out. It was good.
Like you said, there's just so much noise, you know, you kind of can't blame people in a way, you know, there's just so many options, so many thousands of things you can do in the city.
Yeah, any given night.
Right, and everybody's got a podcast.
And everybody's got a podcast. You know. Yeah, we're adding to the noise, you know.
That's right.
But what can you do?
That's right, be a part of it. But yeah, you know, or maybe you can do something, I think we talked about this last time, go on stage and like... you know, cut off some kind of head of an animal.
Yeah.
Do something controversial. Mm-hmm. And then maybe say a message behind it. And then maybe people will start to follow that concept.
Yeah.
I think there's something actually to be said about that. So maybe an extreme version.
Threaten people into liking your music.
Yeah. You know, I mean, the idea back in the day of rock star, well, the concept of rock star doesn't mean that if you're in a band, you're a rock star. But I think that you strive for that concept a little bit. And that was kind of epitomized by, I remember, like, oh, the TV out of the hotel window.
Yeah.
Well, it's really funny. Like, so, you know, we got a contract from Bottle Rock, and it was, when I was reading it, I go, maybe if that even still does exist, which I think it's dying quickly, like that kind of rebel, like rock and roll, let's get wild and lose ourselves for the evening, which I think might be appealing for people to try to be a part of. Mm-hmm. Now that's kind of gone still, you know, I'm even like looking at contracts going, oh, well, you know, line C, item 4, looks like there could be a correction there. It seems so much more sober now and just kind of a little bit more serious. Mm-hmm. And then you have to go on stage and still pretend like you're wild a little bit.
Yeah.
So there's that, you know, I want to wear a full jumpsuit with like, you know, a cut down to my, you know, past my belly button, I think, you know, but it might be a little out of place, I think, for the style of the day.
Yeah, you're nailing it, man. I think there's, like, somewhere along the lines where, for example, like, I'm a huge Doors fan. Jim Morrison's, he's the coolest frontman ever. But, like, in the context of today, is that guy, like, a total asshole? You know what I mean? Like, if that guy was acting, like, behaving like that, you know? Like, I don't know if that would fly in the scene nowadays.
Right, like, you if you encountered that at a show.
Yeah, I don't know if in, like, the professional nature of it nowadays, like, they want you to be that on stage, you know, but I don't know if a guy like that could really make it anymore.
If he had a Twitter, he'd be crucified.
Yeah. Yeah, there'd be too much dirt on him, you know? They'd electrify him.
Yeah.
Right. That sucks, because Morrison's awesome.
Well, you know, maybe that's the thing a band can stand up for is, like, you know, fuck the PC... you know, fuck political correctness. I'm going to have a point of view. I was telling these guys that maybe like a year ago, I was like, guys, we should just have like a point of view. Like, let's just pick a side of a fight. Like, who cares what we actually think and just kind of run with it. And then people will like, you know, 50% of the people will probably get on that side at least, because at least we're standing for something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
And that seems to be such a... like, again, I don't know how it was a little while ago, but like the whole idea of branding seems to be pretty new. Like, in a way, I don't think like Jim Morrison would have been like, "Do we gotta brand this?" You know,
right?
We run into an issue with that with dressing how we play on stage. You know, it's like I just wear on stage what I wear every day. You know, and these other bands are matching outfits and stuff. You know, and like, this is our band. It's like a whole package deal.
We've always kind of struggled with that too. We've never looked fucking like rock stars on stage or nothing, you know.
It shouldn't matter.
It shouldn't matter.
Yeah.
Definitely not.
Yeah. Sometimes you see a band and it's like, those guys look like a rock band, you know, and I've definitely never felt like that. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, part of it too, I mean, if you look up on stage and see somebody that looks like they shouldn't be in the crowd, and then it's coupled with really good music, I think that it can actually add. I mean, that's agreeing with this, the sentiment of branding, and it's unfortunate. It's just kind of the, I think it's just part of the game, and I think part of it is if you're not playing the game, you're not going to be invited to the party. I don't know what to say, you know? Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, yeah. Totally.
You got to meet them halfway.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. you can't have the whole process be completely self-indulgent, which it should be, but the current state of the game, it's not like that at all. You got to sell something.
Right. Sell a concept. Sell something that's hip. Sell something that's cool that people want to be a part of. I mean, you know, it's really interesting. I mean, our local radio station, Live 105, unfortunately, we've never been played on the station. And you kind of listen to their local playlist, and you get a sense, you go, well, oh, well, I guess we're not cool enough. I guess we're not hip enough, because mm-hmm. it seems like it's... They're buying a
We're
package
not indie
over there.
Enough or...
It was really funny about that, too. Great station. But I remember a few years ago, they had this like little promo for their station. They go, it's been 3 years, 4 hours, and 27 seconds since we played Metallica. Because they were proud of the fact that a band that probably made them a lot of money, got them a lot of plays, they were now disowning because they're moving on to what's cool and hip. And if you listen to their stuff, I mean, they...
A band from their city, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
And I remember, too, I mean, they well, loved it. They go, the same commercial, it's been 4 years since we played Limp Bizkit. And, I mean, it was like, we're bigger, better, and beyond that now. And it's just kind of like, you know...
Here comes Mumford & Sons.
Yeah, you know, but what are you going to say about them in 4 years when the population maybe doesn't think they're that great, and then, you know, hop on that thing? So it's unfortunate the way that they're just doing their thing and they're trying to make a buck, and they're all good people over there. But it's, you know, that's kind of a bit of that same model kind of happening everywhere. And bands like us need the local cool alternative station to play our music. Mm-hmm. And now that I just said that, we're never going to get played because they, of course, they listen to this podcast.
Oh yeah, this podcast is like all over the place.
Yeah, it's syndicated, right?
On yeah, yeah. I feel like you guys have had, if I can infer, like maybe a similar struggle as us, where you guys are just doing your thing, have always kind of done your thing, doesn't have anything to do with a trend, and that kind of can hurt you sometimes.
It's fatal.
But like, you ever have that thought, like, dude, we could be the best reggae band in the world if we just like started wood shopping some reggae?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Funny you say that, because it's we're just gonna be a bar blues band from now on. Just bar kind of blues, whatever. Screw it.
Just start putting like hella references to like whiskey and like. Just hella bluesy things and all
stuff.
Your songs.
Yeah. Bluesy stuff.
Yeah.
It'll go over gangbusters.
Last Train of Coming, the new EP by the Ironheart.
You know, part of that, you know, that's interesting, but, you know, like being of a style that's maybe a little bit off the beaten path, it's always kind of, it's always going to kind of have a reference to maybe an old style because we're playing pretty traditional stuff. So it's just rock, mm-hmm. pop kind of music, you know, but to go away from, like, you know, what everyone else is doing that's popular now is definitely a little bit risky. It's just if that hits and you stay kind of true, then I think the reward is going to be much greater. You know, our last band, we had worked with some people and it got kind of funny and we were working with producers and it started to become dishonest. And... you know, to kind of keep that honesty intact and believe in the music, and at some point maybe if it catches on and you can keep the, if you've kept that honesty the whole time, I mean, can you imagine how great that world would be?
Yeah.
And that's the dream. I mean, we could try. My sister always goes, oh, Tom, just write a pop song, you know, just, you could do it all day,
just go on American Idol, man.
Yeah. Well, I'm too old, actually. I think I'll go on The Voice, but,
they have to invite you for that.
The Voice?
Yeah.
What? But you know, it's like, no. I tell my sister, you know, I'm going to stick with what I like doing and what I believe in, and the way, you know, the way that kind of us three, we kind of, it just kind of comes out that way, and it's great because it's like, oh, that's our default. Let's not mess with it too much. Let's not overthink it now. It's like, that's the way it pops out.
That's really well put. And I think there have been enough bands over the last, like, decade or so that proves that that can happen. Like, you know, the Black Keys or, like, before that, like, the White Stripes or something that had nothing to do with what was cool. And then when they blew up, it was, like, extra cool, you know?
Right. I mean, you know, it's you, maybe even more... The Black Keys, when I hear them and I listen to kind of, like, old, like, 60s blues, mm-hmm. it's very... similar.
Oh, totally.
I mean, just kind of like Elvis.
I just mean not that it was original, but it was original at that moment in time.
People needed that then. And I mean, just like refreshing. When Elvis was doing Chuck Berry, they go, oh, well, you know, Elvis is white. You know, hey, ooh, we like that.
Yeah.
But Chuck Berry was the man. You
Way
know?
Better.
So, you know, but it's like, oh, well, I can get behind that. You know, those are, you know, two guys from Ohio. Like, yo, that's hip as shit. So, and they're good, but, you know, it's just, interesting, you know. I was thinking maybe we could do just kind of like 60s soul with a little edge on it, and maybe we can run with that. So I haven't told the guys yet, but now I'm gonna try it.
Yeah. You heard it here first.
You know, yeah. We just started recording on our next kind of mini album release yesterday, and it's actually really funny. Like, these songs are more. Maybe even a little bit more traditional, but with kind of our flavor on it, you know, than our last three song release for our first album. Yeah right?
Yeah, for sure. We also have the heaviest song we've ever done. Yeah.
Plus,
that always feels good.
Yeah. It's a good song.
Nice.
How far into like the process are you guys?
One day. We just track drums, basically.
We've been writing for weeks now and getting them all together and putting it down and getting all the parts and the arrangements figured out. But we just started tracking, so we're on our way.
Cool. Yeah, that's about where we are. We're doing about the same thing at the moment.
Where are you guys recording here?
We're going to record up in Eureka this time. We got this guy that's just opening a studio up there.
Cool.
His name's Sean. What's his last name?
I don't know.
Sean's awesome. But he's going to take a shot on us. And he's got a new studio opening up. So. Cool.
Well, you got to give him a plug then, a full plug.
Yeah.
Is he hooking you up for free?
No.
Okay. Never mind, Sean.
Nothing's ever free.
But it's a good deal.
He's giving us a deal.
Good. Yeah. That's there you go. It's first name only, then Sean. Yeah.
When are you guys doing that? When can we expect to hear some new French girls?
I think we're going to do it next month, like around April. Yeah. We've been writing songs all year for it. The songs are pretty much there. So.
Yeah.
So who plays games? That's a Razor Mouse.
I'm the Warcraft dork in the house. Yeah.
Okay, because I'm level 60 mage.
Dude, level 90, dude.
Oh, I don't even know.
Come level on. Man. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, right. Charlie, don't brag about your problems.
Dude, I phase in and out of it for like months at a time. You never really quit.
Yeah, I know what you mean, man.
Recovering while addict. Yeah.
I think you were clean for a while, and then you saw Ronda Rousey playing WoW, and you like just jumped right back in.
Yeah, God.
Does she play?
Yeah.
Or does she?
That almost made me want to start.
Yeah, there's got to be something to it if like a girl that could whoop everyone's ass is doing it.
I started WoW because my ex-girlfriend and my brother were playing. I was like, what fucking game is this? I just got hooked.
And now he's ranked number 3 in the world.
Fuck yeah.
He's hell easy, aren't you? You're 2K, right?
No, I'm like close. I'm pushing 2K right now.
Damn.
Yeah.
Damn.
I'm like 1800 right now.
Yeah. Damn.
And twos. I don't do threes.
Yeah, fuck threes.
I don't have a threes partner, so that's
fine. It's a different game at that point.
It is.
Yeah. Totally.
Well, I have no idea what anyone is saying right now.
Yeah, me neither. It's like Chinese.
Yeah.
That's
good.
We'll talk later. That's fine. Yeah. Is there a general theme with the new album, with the new stuff that you guys are working on?
No.
Good.
Yeah. No, that's not really how... I mean, that's... To add that level of complexity to be like, okay, and now let's all file it down into this, no way. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We couldn't do that. That's why we like... This is more like traditional, and we have the heaviest song we've ever done on the same recording session. We're going to break it up and kind of try to release it in a smart way.
Mm.
You know, we try to write 30 to get 3. Mm. So, you know, we'll once it's all said and done, we'll kind of see how it's turning out and... You know, that's the thing. If a song maybe sounds a little more traditional, kind of, we're going to probably try to crank up the cruddy guitars and try to, you know, try to over reverb the drums a little bit and just the bass get really gnarly, and so it's got that juxtaposition of being kind of traditional that but kind of gritty at the same time. Yeah. So it's, you know, we like that stuff.
Good.
You said you were in a band before the Iron Heart as well?
Yeah, once over.
Was that kind of a similar style of music? Joel's shaking his head.
No, it was more, like, it started very pop-punk, like, very Newfound Glory-esque type pop-punk, but it morphed into a cool kind of rock band, but it was still rooted in, like, a maybe more aggressive pop-punk, I guess, you know? And, like he said, sort of by the end of it, it became a little, you know, dishonest in a sense. Like, we were very formulaic, and it was very, you know, pop-rock, you know, because we were trying to write a hit or whatever, you know? And yeah, it was maybe more in vain with what we grew up with, or like what we liked when we were younger, or at least what we liked when we were young. And this is great for podcasts. Yes. Yeah. This is awesome.
Although, you know, so we put out three albums in that band, right?
We did three releases, yeah, two EPs and then one full length album.
And so, you know, and it's on iTunes if you guys just sample it, or it's probably, you probably find it online or whatever, but Falling From Stories was, that was probably
sick.
That was about as honest as we got in that band. And like, that album's really cool. It's heavy, and it's,
we recorded at Grizzly Studios.
Call it pop punk.
Right. I don't really know what to say, because it wasn't really pop punk, but it wasn't really anything else definitively. It definitely wasn't blues.
We worked with a guy named Lauren Israel after that record, and he basically like dumbed us down and like pop, like made us into this like pop, like rock.
Really tried to like, you know, told me not to do any fills and keep it super simple and like bam, bam, bam.
He's a guy that's worked with Neon Trees. So
Plain White Tees, Jimmy Eat World, you know.
Gotcha. He's earned his stripes.
Right down the middle.
Yeah.
Hits.
And there's nothing, like, I love Jimmy Eat World. You know, there's a certain spot for that kind of stuff, but we weren't really doing that, and we were trying to become that, and it wasn't really what we wanted to become, and ultimately it broke us, I think.
Gotcha.
You know.
No. And you know what's interesting about that now is when we write a song, it's kind of nice, and it's maybe a bit of a curse too, but when we write, it automatically pops out with proper structure.
It's like a certain form.
Right.
We don't have to go, oh, we can literally just start on a chord progression and we'll end up at a bridge and in a chorus, and and then we can go, well, is that a good song or a bad song? Cut it or keep it. But so at least we can go on autopilot, and we still have a pop structure, so like radio stations will maybe play it if they were nice, you know? Yeah. But so maybe that is kind of a good thing that happened from that kind of hard time.
Yeah, it was a great experience for sure. Like, I mean, we got a lot of experience. We played a ton of shows, and we got really, you know, it was like almost, you know, like punk rock college or something, you know, like learning the ropes and learning how to be in a band and everything, you know? How many times does your first band like really, you know, make the big jump? I guess sometimes it does, but I mean, a lot of times for people in this scene, you know, you kind of have to, you know, grow and figure it out, you know, and I think that was a great time for us, but it's different now, you know, it's more natural, but like he said, like, we sort of know how to do it now a little better when it comes to writing and like just even the whole band stuff, playing shows and booking and you know, networking and everything. It's different now.
Developed that band ESP. You get a little bit.
Yeah, right. You get, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. So then I'm curious, when did the blues come into the picture?
Tom.
So Joel and Justin, I mean, they've been playing together they were in a band.
Since I was like 14 years old.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. And now he's 45, so that's a long time.
Wow. I'm 28 now, 29 now.
These guys, probably more than anybody, they're kind of, they have that super locked in thing. Right. And then, like I said before, I was kind of raised, blues guitar was my thing. You know, I was playing in open mic nights, and I could only run up to the stage and play on stage when I was 17 in Santa Barbara and like play like a quick, like couple blues songs and stuff. And like, that was always my thing.
Any like key guitar influences along those lines?
I was addicted. I was absolutely obsessed with Stevie Ray Vaughan.
Yeah, man.
Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah, man.
I always like to say Band of Gypsies.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, mm-hmm. Other Jimi Hendrix was fine. Band of Gypsies was my shit.
Was that
I loved it.
Buddy Miles, I think.
Right. It was like kind of like their super group kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. That's who played at Woodstock. Was Band of Gypsies.
Was it?
Yeah, man.
See, well, I'm a huge fan. Oh, cool. I don't know anything about them. That's really awesome. But they have just the one album. I mean, I would just kind of figure out. And then Led Zeppelin, just to a point where, like, I get, the, like, there's, like, few things that gives me the chills with music. Very little does it. But, like, Led Zeppelin, like, oh, God. They made me freak out, you know?
Yeah.
And Steve Ray Vaughan, I mean, seeing him, like, Austin, you know, City Limits, like, it's, like, mind numbing.
You saw Stevie Ray Vaughan?
In 1974, no, even in like 80, must early have been. 80s. No, I had all the VHSs. Okay. You guys don't know what those are, like tape boxes that have movies on. Yeah. Yeah, and I had all that stuff.
I dabble in blues guitar, so I had to ask the questions. I'm repping my Robert Johnson shirt at the moment.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, man.
Anything you're listening to now that you particularly like?
Any of you guys?
I've been digging the new the only Black Map record. I don't know if you guys have heard it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Checked it out when they played the Phoenix. Yeah. For sure.
Those guys are awesome.
Yeah.
Really good.
Yeah, they played a solid show that night.
Yeah.
That was sweet.
Those guys are like, you know, they're pros. Like,
yeah.
They're like a super group in my world. I don't know how much you know about them, but their drummer was in a band called Far, who's from Sacramento, who played with the Deftones back in the day, and like they have a really amazing album. And then their guitar player is in the band Dredge, who's phenomenal.
Yeah.
And you know, so like I say, in my world, they're super. And even Ben, the singer, he's in a really cool sort of Bay Area band called the Trophy Fire, and like they're a really, really good band. I've been listening to their record a lot too. I'm so happy they played with us.
And I just want to put out there a song that I found recently that really does it for me. And ladies, if you're listening. No. The song Otis Redding, Lover's Prayer, and if you look it up, you get a sense of what really good music is, because that song is will blow your mind.
Yeah, I don't know that song. I gotta check that out.
We'll
play it at the end of the podcast.
Yeah, if we can, there we go.
I'll get sued for it.
Yeah. I don't think we don't have anything.
You're not charging for this, right? Yeah. So you can play whatever you want.
Oh, yeah. There
you
go. Shows what I know. Cool, man.
What do you guys do outside of music? Is there an outside of music? Go to school?
Yeah, I'm a commercial painter, too.
Nice. Nice.
Yeah, we all have jobs, like, you know, normal people. But I love basketball.
Nice. Nice.
Basketball.
Go Warriors.
Well, this has been...
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Great.
Coming all this way, dude. It's great.
Hopefully. Wait, let's do plugs real quick.
Yeah.
You can check us out, theIronheartBand.com, on Facebook at The Ironheart Band. Our music's on iTunes, V, our debut EP, and...
it kicks ass.
Thanks, man. And then our last one, Salon de Refuse, recorded at Dave Grohl's Studio 606. And we've got some really cool stuff coming up. Show in Walnut Creek with these guys.
Oh, yeah.
March 20th, the Red House, Walnut Creek.
That's going to be good.
Overland, believe it or not,
Bully
tickets.
West, French Girls.
Right, and if you're at Bottle Rock, be sure we're playing on the Friday. We're not sure of what stage or what time yet, but we'll be there on that Friday, May 29th, at the Bottle Rock Festival in Napa.
Right
on. All right.
See you.
Cool. Thanks for coming up. Thanks.